Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
In the middle of the Pacific Ocean, halfway between California and Hawaii, a pile of trash twice the size of Texas sits stewing, making our waters toxic. Greenpeace says this patch of plastics, which then breaks down into microplastics that contribute to climate change, gets bigger by the minute. But sadly, you've already heard this story, or one of hundreds of environmental horror stories like it, paired with debilitating data signaling legitimate threats to our planet, and messages like the one Jim Ski issued recently at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. He co-authored the panel's annual report and told us,
"It is now or never to limit global warming."
Sounds like we're deciding never. The UN Secretary General paints a really grim picture saying, quote, "We are on a fast track to climate disaster."
Despite the evidence, many of us aren't compelled to action. And some of us even deny the existence of a crisis altogether. If climate change poses a real threat to our lives, why aren't more of us compelled to combat it? This week on Connect the Dots, we investigate the psychological mechanisms behind our inaction, along with ways that we might overcome the denial and cognitive dissonance surrounding environmental issues to give a better future a fighting chance. We're joined by psychology and environmental studies professor Susan Clayton, who co-authored a major study on the subject with the American Psychological Association, and by Kate Melges, an oceans campaigner at Greenpeace USA who works to end the flow of plastic pollution. I'm Sydney Fishman, and this is Connect the Dots from Odyssey. For years, Susan Clayton has been researching how climate change induces anxiety and a sense of what she calls debilitating worry. She's even developed scales to measure the impact of climate change on an individual's anxiety.
Research into this topic has really increased in certainly the past 10 years, and I think accelerating in the past 3 to 5. One way to think about it is to think about the different kinds of impacts that climate change has on essentially the world and how that might affect our mental health. So we know that climate change is leading to an increase in extreme weather events, major storms, wildfires, things like that. And I think it's not surprising to know that those things have an impact on mental health. You tend to see increases in things like anxiety and depression, post-traumatic stress disorder after those extreme events. I think much less obvious or salient to people is the idea that the slower changes in climate, especially rising temperatures, can also affect mental health. So we know that high temperatures are associated with increased suicide rates, for example, and with increased psychiatric hospitalization. And the mechanisms, the reasons for that are still being explored, but there's some pretty substantial data there. And then a third kind of mechanism that you might be thinking about is just the anxiety and stress associated with thinking about climate change. And although that's, you know, not by itself going to lead you to have a mental health problem, it is a source of stress that can contribute to the threat to your mental health.
The 2022 IPCC report revealed that despite the efforts of climate activists, Disruption caused by climate change impacts the lives of billions of people globally, and that the people and ecosystems with the least amount of resources to manage these disruptions are being impacted the most. And while the report states we could halve emissions by 2033 to improve the outlook of climate change, some will likely continue to ignore the issue.
Are there any more like psychological mechanisms behind this besides denial, or is it mainly just denial?
There's definitely other mechanisms. As I say, sometimes people just don't know, they don't understand. So it's a difficult topic to deal with, kind of just in terms of how we make sense of it. Even the best climate scientists can't tell you exactly what's going to happen and exactly when it's going to happen. There are, of course, very complicated models that are being used to make predictions. So this may just feel to people like, well, we don't really know, so why worry about it? We also see quite a lot of political polarization, especially in the United States, and that's also can affect the way people respond to climate change.
In a 2021 study, the Pew Research Center said not many Republicans or Republican-leaning supporters expressed deep concern about addressing climate change.
There's a lot of research that shows that which political party you belong to is a very important predictor of what you believe to be true about climate change. And surprisingly, it's even more important than how much education you have. So people want to kind of endorse the attitude or the perspective that's associated with the political party they belong to. And we've seen this in a very unfortunate way because historically, no one political party has owns environmental issues, and there have been a lot of positive environmental policies enacted by Republican administrations. But you definitely see people deliberately choosing to make it a political issue in some cases these days.
Nearly a decade ago, Clayton wrote a piece for Psychology Today referencing a hypothetical psychological tipping point at which the world might actually start to take climate change seriously, regardless of their politics. We asked if she thinks that tipping point exists now.
I don't think there is a psychological tipping point. I think it's more an example of, you know, many of us have heard the myth about the frog in the boiling water, that if you heat the water up very gradually, that the frog doesn't notice that it's getting hot until it's boiled to death. And I feel like that's the way we are with climate change, that it's kind of worse every year, but there's no single point at which people say, okay, well, we've come too far now, which would be the tipping point.
And while many of us do care and acknowledge climate change, we aren't actively thinking about it in our everyday lives. What's the psychology behind this phenomenon?
There are several reasons for that. One of them, of course, is our emotional protective tendencies. So we don't want to think about depressing topics. We have a very impressive ability to engage in denial and just not think about things that are scary or depressing. And that's part of it. I think a large part is also that, in a sense, we are programmed to focus more on current events than contemplation of the future. And when you think about it, you know, tens of thousands of years ago, people didn't have to worry about the future that much because they didn't live that long. So we tend to focus on the more immediate decisions we have to make. And when it comes to climate change, I think most people don't see an immediate action to take, and they just think, well, somebody will figure something out. And then a third thing that's going on, which I think is really important, is that we kind of operate on autopilot. We do what we've always done. We look to see what other people are doing, and they're more or less doing what they've always done. So we have other things to think about besides climate change, other more immediate goals, and we let those continue to kind of direct our lives without taking the time to think, but wait, if this climate change is really happening, you know, maybe I should do something differently.
Kate Melgis has worked as an oceans campaigner for Greenpeace for more than 10 years. The organization, founded about 50 years ago, does not accept any funds from corporations or governments.
So we really can speak truth to power, we have no permanent friends, no permanent enemies.
At Greenpeace, Melges is no stranger to action paralysis.
I mean, I myself get overwhelmed, and I absolutely have seen people that have such big, big things that we're talking about and that we're dealing with and up against every day. It is really hard to not get overwhelmed, and especially over the last, 2 years with the pandemic, and just has really put things into perspective. There's so much going on. But try to show people that their voice matters, and there's a lot of ways that they can contribute aside from just from lifestyle changes, pushing on corporations, talking to your elected officials. Like, there's a lot that people can do, and it's not going to require all of us to do everything, but all of us, a lot of us, to do a lot of little things. But there's hope. And looking at the younger generation, the kids that are coming up today, how inspiring they are and how motivated they are to act, because their future's on the line. That is what gives me hope.
Recent natural disasters have increased interest in the population's commitment to climate change efforts, especially Hurricane Ida, which slammed the south and east coasts of the U.S. last year. Disasters like these make the impact of climate change painfully obvious, especially when people are harmed and even die from them.
I think with a lot of the recent natural disasters, and as we're starting to see more extreme weather, climate events, like the deep freezing temperatures in Texas, the heat wave in the Pacific Northwest, last summer, the increase in hurricanes, I think people are starting to see climate change in action. They're starting to see the effects that the warming of the planet is having.
Apart from natural disasters, geopolitical events have drawn our attention to the use of oil and plastics. In response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, America stopped importing oil from Russia. White House spokesperson Jen Psaki recently remarked that the ongoing war supports the U.S. efforts to extract more fossil fuels from out of the ground and in our own country. And according to the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, the COVID-19 pandemic led to an increase in plastic use, largely fueled by the demand for single-use plastics.
Plastic is made from fossil fuels. Most plastic comes from oil and gas. We know that, Russia is a large oil-producing country. Oil is always tied to some really, just not great things. I think there's a bit of a connection, I think, with COVID. We weren't sure, how does it spread? What happens? Like, where could we get COVID from? And there was a lot of science around single use and disposable kind of being the way to go to protect ourselves from the virus. And we did some research and found that the plastics industry was actually using some misleading science to help bolster profits and increase plastic usage. We saw a lot of, supermarkets and retail stores roll back, and cities and states roll back their plastic bag bans during the pandemic. There was just a lot of fear how and when you could contract the virus, and really saw some industries kind of take advantage of that.
Another legitimate reason people may feel overwhelmed when attempting to take action against climate change is that the most necessary changes must come by large industries and institutions.
There's only so much we can do as individuals. Yes, we can stop. We can, limit our usage of cars. We can limit, bring our own water bottle someplace to fill it up, but that does make a difference. But at the end of the day, we need huge systematic change. And that is going to take from, companies and governments completely changing the way that we get our energy, the way that goods are delivered and packaged to people around the world, the way, transportation is.
How corporations impact the environment today has roots in a long history of colonialism and what scientist Paul Dreesen has dubbed environmental colonialism. Colonialism refers to how various European nations explored, settled, and exploited large parts of the world beginning in the late 1400s. Environmental colonialism specifically refers to the way colonists exploited native lands. Examples of the impact of colonization on the environment include the introduction of invasive species and diseases, environmental hazards that have largely impacted Black and Brown communities, who often have less resources to defend themselves against environmental degradation. The term colonialism made it into the IPCC report on climate change for the first time this year.
Climate change and colonialism, they're rooted in exploitation and degradation of the environment. You know, we are constantly as societies looking for ways to like consume, using our natural resources in a way that are not sustainable. You know, they're not going to be around forever. And so I think that's very much, you know, looking at the Industrial Revolution and, you know, when carbon emissions really started to skyrocket, as society has kind of, I don't know if evolved is the right word, but, you know, kind of like gone on over the last, you know, couple of centuries, we've really done a number on the environment and the planet and just mining and drilling for oil and burning gas, burning fossil fuels, like trying to mine the ocean floor, you know, commercial fishing, overfishing.
Susan Clayton explained how colonialism continues to influence corporate behavior around corporate climate change activism.
Yeah, I'll interpret colonialism, you know, very broadly as the sense that by the developed world, mostly the Western world, that they can take whatever they want from the developing countries and kind of impose their own ways of life on them. And I think even now we can still see this, interestingly enough, some of the ways in which we try to address climate change. We might say, well, we need to plant, you know, a million trees, and planting a million trees is a good thing. But some of these programs might involve planting the trees abroad in developing countries in ways that maybe the people who live there are not sufficiently consulted about what kind of trees and where should the trees be.
Though Clayton didn't reference the company directly, online retail giant Amazon announced this month that it would plant at least 1 million trees in an effort to mitigate its significant carbon emissions. Melges said Coca-Cola also recently took a step towards being more environmentally responsible this year by establishing a reusable packaging target.
Unfortunately, they don't have plans or any commitment to reduce the amount of single-use plastics.
Melges said these corporate moves to address climate change are necessary to improve our planet's outlook moving forward.
For our plastics work, we are calling on consumer goods companies, retailers, the big brands, so like Coke, Pepsi, Nestle, Unilever, you know, Kroger, Target, Walmart, all of those companies to phase out single-use plastic packaging, get rid of it, and very quickly move towards system of reuse and refill and packaging-free options. Move away from recycling as the solution. Recycling is definitely part of the solution. And so we really need to see companies just transform the way that they are doing business and stop focusing on false solutions. We need to stop plastic pollution at the source. I think about, you know, if you came home and your faucet was running and it was just leaking all over your house, your sink is just, you know, exploding water everywhere, you wouldn't immediately go and get a mop and just start cleaning up the floor as the water is coming out of the faucet. You would turn off the faucet and then start to deal with cleaning up all the water from everywhere.
When thinking about climate change, it often feels dire and sometimes even too big to handle. But the average person can do simple things to manipulate the behavior of large institutions. Melges thinks more people are beginning to understand the scope of the climate crisis.
10 years ago, I think folks are really starting to realize it's not a partisan issue. It's a global issue. It's an issue that everyone is going to experience. We already are experiencing it. We are, you know, on a trajectory that is not looking amazing unless we take some drastic measures like pretty soon, and hopeful that we will be able to do that soon. But the only way, you know, we're going to be able to do that is if people speak up and contact their elected officials, contact companies, and really start demanding change.
And that hope lies not just in thinking everything will turn out okay, because I think that's sort of blind optimism, which is different, but hope that's based on the idea that there are possibilities, there are potential things that each of us can do, And there are a lot of people who are working on this issue. And I find, to me, that's a really powerful source of resilience, is thinking about all the other people who are trying to make a difference. So even if on any given day or any given week or even in a month or a year, we don't get done what we had hoped to do, I still have hope because I know those people are continuing to work on it and that, you know, I can be part of that initiative.
This episode of Connect the Dots was written and produced by me, Sydney Fishman, Lauren Berry, and Dempsey Pilott, with editing by Cooper Mall and additional editing, mixing, and mastering by executive producer Mallory Somera. Subscribe to Connect the Dots and listen to past episodes by heading to the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. From KCBS Radio in San Francisco, I'm Sydney Fishman. Thanks for listening.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.